Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and today is another edition in our series, What's Brewing?, where we explore how God is showing up in the neighborhood and people of faith are living out mission in transforming ways. Today, we are here with John Vanderwalker. John currently serves as the Mission Center President of Inland West Mission Center, supporting Community of Christ in parts or all of Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Utah, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, and North Dakota. John serves in the office of High Priest. His master's thesis focused on the sacraments of the church, and he is an avid fisherman. Among many other gifts and talents, John is a woodworker extraordinaire. Welcome, John. It's great to have you with us today on Project Zion podcast.
Thank you, Robin. It's good to be here with you. I've been looking forward to this for some time now.
John, let's take some time now to get to know you. So please tell us a little bit about how you became connected with Community of Christ, and then what brought you to life devoted to full-time ministry.
I was raised in Community of Christ, joined the church at age 8, and at that time of baptism in the Payette River, I was convicted to be a follower of Jesus at 8 years old. It's it was an extraordinary experience for me and for all of the others who were being baptized that day. I have had experiences of God's grace throughout my life in mysterious and tangible ways, through the impress of the Holy Spirit at times when I didn't expect it, and then through the impress of the mind of God expressed through human voice and action. So all of that kind of combined together caused me to desire to serve the church. And when I was asked to respond in a way that could be full-time ministry, I did respond in a positive way to that. And I've not been sorry for that decision.
John, it sounds like you had a very powerful spiritual experience at a very young age, the age of 8, being baptized in a river. And when the opportunity to go into full-time ministry with the church came, it was something that you embraced with a full sense of commitment in that journey. Can you tell us a little bit of what it was like growing up in the church, and as you were called into ordained ministry, the different offices that you held, and what ages those happened in your life?
As a youngster, my early life before junior high or middle school, my family moved a lot. So my interaction with the church was pretty varied, from congregations in the Seattle area to Silver Spring, Maryland, when I attended the Washington, D.C. congregation. And then I landed in the Buell, Idaho congregation in the 1971. The experiences were always one of acceptance and welcomed into a community that I was not familiar with. The experience of my baptism was when I was in a pretty stable congregational life. I had a priesthood member come to my home and bring pre-baptismal classes to me, and I was always looking forward to that night of the week when he would come and we would spend time talking about Jesus and the church. And my grandfather baptized me at a reunion in Idaho. And during that time, when we got out of the water, and there were, I think, 7 or 8 of us baptized that day, when we got out of the water, people were weeping. And I didn't really understand what was going on until later in the day when people began talking about the music. There was no musicians present, and there were no choirs there. And yet the people said they were hearing music, and they attributed that to angel song. I did not hear it. I just knew that it was an important day for me and that I felt like I had been cleansed in my understanding of baptism at that time was that it was a cleansing act for me. The interesting thing is that about 30 some years later, after I became a full-time minister for the church, I was visiting with a lady in her home. She was in her 80s, and I asked her when she, kind of as my standard approach to meeting people I didn't know, I asked her, you know, when were you baptized? And she said that she was baptized July 7th, 1967. I said, well, I was baptized July 7th, 1967. She said, yeah, at Camp Cascade Reunion. And I said, I was baptized at Camp Cascade Reunion. So we were in the same baptismal service at the river close to Reunion Grounds. And then the thing that really got me was, she said, and that's the day the angels sang.
Aww.
And then she went into the other room and came back and brought a picture. And there I was.
Wow.
In that photo. And it was just, it was an amazing experience of unity.
Oh.
And that, you know, that was before I pursued a master's degree in religion and before I began my study of sacraments. But in that moment, I understood the unifying principles and fact of baptism and confirmation,
mm-hmm.
how we are tied to each other through those sacraments. It was just an amazing thing. And the cool thing about it was I wasn't alone. There was an elder with me that was able to witness what this lady said and bringing out the picture. It was just really a neat experience for me.
Mm. That's amazing. So what was your first office of priesthood and when did that happen in your life?
I was called to the office of priest. I believe it was in 1983. Dates are not terribly important to me, but I believe it was 1983. I was had a young family. I'd been married a couple of years, and
mm-hmm.
and we were starting out. I was a business owner at the time, and I found myself, because from a very young age, probably when I was preteen, I was told by my grandmother that I would be, someday I'd grow up and I would be a leader in the church. And I always, you know, kind of aspired to that. And finally, when I was about 24 years old, I guess, I began to think, well, there must be something that's holding this back. And so I started examining myself and changing some things in my life. And it wasn't very long that evidently those changes that I was making must have become evident to the pastor of the congregation. I was called a priest. I served in that that office for several years. Then I was called elder. And a couple of years after that, I was called to 70. And it was in the office of 70 that I went to church to work for the church and full-time ministry. And served in the office at 70 for several years and then into the office of high priest.
Thanks for that. That kind of gives us a little bit of context as your discipleship unfolded in your life and took on various dimensions of ministry. There are so many avenues of mission, John, that you could share about with us, and we do plan to have you on the podcast again to delve into some of those. Today, however, I want to focus on how you fine-tuned the mission lens while you were serving at the Community of Christ Samish Island Campground. So I think it'd be good for us to start with a brief overview of the long-standing camping tradition in Community of Christ, as many of our listeners may not be familiar with that and will need to understand kind of that backdrop of our tradition as you share specifically about how you engaged mission with the Samish Island Campground. So can you give us a little overview on that camping tradition?
The Community of Christ has been a church that gathers from its very beginning. From back in the founding days of in the 1860s, there were every 6 months, there was a conference, general conference, and then it moved to every year. Now, the Community of Christ as a whole has a world conference every 3 years. So we are a community that finds it important to be together. I like to call the camping experiences experiments in living in Zion. We used to talk about that a lot more than we do now, but it's coming together and being in community for a common goal of learning and whatnot. So there's a long tradition of this. And when we went every 2 years having a world conference, leadership thought it was fairly important that we have something to take in or take up the slack of not being together every year. And so reunions became something that were very much promoted. And the reunion is no matter which mission center it is, reunions are a function of the World Church. They're not really a mission center function, publicized in the Herald and on the church's website, unlike other mission center activities. So it's a reunions especially are kind of a big deal. Then we also found that it was important that we have formative experience for children and youth. And so the camping program, along with a lot of other camping programs in the society that surrounds us, were developed. And we found that pulling youth and children away from, home and the daily tasks of life and the daily temptations of life are formative for young people. And they're able to have good experiences with one another, tighten the bonds of friendship and fellowship and tighten their bonds with Christ. We do have a rich tradition in camping, and it's been very successful over the years. And we've done a lot of it on a shoestring. So it shows that you don't have to have all the fancy stuff to be able to really form people's lives in a positive way.
That's for sure. In the early days of the camping tradition, where families basically horse and buggy wagon kind of deal hauled their stuff to wherever the church was meeting to set up camp for a week, give or take. Certainly there were no frills attached to that, and that tradition somehow made its way into the heart of who we are as a people. Listeners, if you want to learn more about our reunion camping tradition, check out Project Zion Podcast 117 with Apostles Locke Mackay and Janae Grover, and they will go deep into that. But for now, I think John has set the stage for us to hear more about incarnating the mission of Jesus Christ at Samish Island. And John, we just want to know all the details.
Well, you said something in part of your introduction that was really important. And one of those things that I want to acknowledge, as I start, you said that how did you fine tune the lens of the camp to be more missional? And the fine tune is the real key there. I did not do this. The Samish Island Campground Retreat Center has a long history of providing a place, a sacred space for first the church and for youth, especially. It was founded as a youth camp. So I'm going to say that again. It was founded as a youth camp, and reunion was something that was kind of central to it, but not the motivating factor. They wanted a place for kids to be able to go and have an experience with Christ. And so the grounds were developed for that. And Community of Christ is a building culture. We like to build stuff, and sometimes we build stuff we don't need, but we think we need it at the time. And they built a lot of stuff there at the campground, and it is a fabulous facility. So there were a lot of people that went before me that were dedicated to providing camping opportunities to church. But as time went by and there was a broadening understanding of stewardship and that our facilities could be a blessing to others, others were invited to use the facility. And so there was a significant number of not-for-profit groups that began using Samish Island Campground. Some of the people that went before me and really set the stage for what Sandy and I were able to do. Sandy is my wife. Sandy and I were able to do at Samish. Glenn Fischel was the president of the board for years, and he set a trajectory that was carried on by Mark Chapman, that was then carried on by Jim Fish. And then all of the managers and camp caretakers that have gone before provided a palette for Sandy and I to work on. And then my experience with the church and spending years steeped in the enduring principles helped kind of shift a little bit of the practice of the campground, but more of how we as a church should think about our grounds. As I said before, camping for us in the Community of Christ is an experiment in Zion. But the other groups that come there are coming there for various reasons. Some come to explore creativity through art. Some come to meditate. Others come for relaxation in a peaceful place to kind of find themselves in the world again. So there's a lot of reasons that people come. One of the things that I found in, I'm a word person. I think words are important. I like to use a lot of them, as you may be able to tell, but I also know that using the right words are important. When I would welcome a group to the campground, and I welcomed the group, I would say to the whole group on the first night there, this space, Samish Island Campground and Retreat Center, is offered to you as a sanctuary of peace by Community of Christ. And when I would say that, I would get very affirmative reaction from the people, especially those who had been there before. As they had experienced this space, they understood, because of our efforts as a church to provide this place of comfort, to care for this place of beauty, and to be engaged in the world by inviting others to utilize this space, we were offering and providing a place of peace for the people. And for me, that was kind of the foundational understanding that it bloomed into a lot of other aspects. I began to see that the property was a witness, and that everything that people encountered in the property should be something that would bear witness to the enduring principles, the sacredness of creation, the worth of all persons, the diversity. And that's one of the things that a lot of us don't really think about, but something as simple as saying we are no longer going to use pesticides and herbicides on the lawn, because it does two things. It damages the environment, and we have copious oyster farms just off of the property and bays around us, that the runoff from our property could harm those oysters. We don't want to do that, because we think that creation is sacred. And the diversity that actually comes up in a lawn when you quit spraying the weeds, you have a very diverse environment there, which increases the diversity of insect life and provides pasture for things like bees and other pollinating insects that we are in dire need of preserving. So all of these things together just kind of witness of the principles of that the church upholds. And the people began to recognize that. I mean, they began to see, actually saw people standing on the lawn looking at the ground, watching pollinators work flowers because we didn't spray the weeds. And to me, that's key accomplishment. And it was cheaper. we didn't have to buy pesticides or herbicides. I guess the fine tune or the fine tuning was more between ears than it was really anything else. Of course, that first creation in our mind did translate into the way we manage the property. Now, we tried to manage it at the highest level of hospitality that we could with the resources that we had. And our resources, especially human resources, are pretty thin. Two full-time staff and one volunteer person is there all the time. That was a pretty thin staff. We did have the blessings of people coming. But then we found, as we expanded on our offering this as a sanctuary of peace and engaging others in the process of maintenance, a lot of the not-for-profit people would show up for work weeks. They would offer to have work projects while they were there, which was something that had been done before I got there. But we expanded that. And eventually they began to look for ways that they could financially support the campground in ways that were beyond just paying registration fees. The real change, I think, was in the minds of not only myself, but I think we began to change the minds of the campground board too. And, you know, it's not an easy thing because it is a business that we're running. Even though it's a not-for-profit business, we do have to pay attention to the bottom line, so you can't just go willy-nilly and spend money wherever you want. You have to pay attention to what you're up to and get the most bang for your dollar. We found that if we did things absolutely the best way we can, we would see a long-term return on that. People were happier. We increased participation in several of the groups because we provided a more comfortable space. One of the things that was just extremely important was at Sandwich Island, we have a table where the staff eats every meal. And that being at that table made us available to the campground or the program directors from not only Community of Christ programs, but every program that was there, the Buddhists, the artists, whomever was there. They knew that I would be at that table three times a day and that I was available to them three times a day without exception. And they also found me finding them. I mean, I would go look them up at least once a day and usually twice a day, morning and evening, and just ask, how are things going for you and your group? Is there anything that I can do for you to help your group have a better experience? Have you heard anything that I need to know? Just that being engaged with the directors was a huge benefit to me as a manager to know what's going on, but also it made them feel especially cared for. I think it's the big shift for me anyway was in like I said, between my ears. It seemed to work out.
John, there's something in particular that you did with representatives of the various renter organizations that I thought was very innovative and astutely insightful and connected with mission, and that was hosting a retreat with those folks together. Can you tell us about that?
One of the things that I discovered when I got there is that all of these people had profoundly important stories about Sandwich Island Campground Retreat Center. They appreciated the beauty, they appreciated the Community of Christ, but they had no comprehension of just the volume and the diversity of people and groups that came there for worship, for meditation, for creativity. And so as Sandy and I were thinking about this, we thought that it would be really good to have a retreat that would invite all the program directors and assistants to a retreat that the campground would pay for. I mean, we sponsored the retreat, paid for the meals, offered free camping. And if people wanted to lay over an extra day, like for Sunday, they could stay Saturday night free and enjoy the campground without any agenda on Sunday. We did have a fairly good response to that. Kind of the prelude to our retreat, though, was that we had, over the year before, the camping season before, and our camping season at Sandwich Island Campground started February 15th and ended the last day of October. So we have a long season with 35 to 39 or 40 events a year, and the calendar is fully booked. So there's an event going on there all the time, unless we're in a refitting time where the staff and volunteers are doing some minor repairs or upgrades. So during that year, we had offered to every person who came to the campground for an event the opportunity to do a survey. And it was a survey that was had a lot of questions about your experience at Sandwich Island Campground. It was all about your experience. What were the beds like? How do you like the cabins? How do you like the beds? How do you rate the food? And our food got extremely high rating. Very, very. We have we don't have cooks. We have chefs. And I called them chefs, and I even put it on their time cards when I paid them. We asked them kind of feeling questions. And then we asked them to share an experience that was very significant to them that they had had at Samish Island. And we had a stack of paper, probably at the end of the year, probably 10 inches deep of all of these responses. And we compiled all of that data together, and we wrote down all of those stories and put them together. And so the program directors came at the end of that year when they had felt like they had already been heard because of these surveys. And we took that data and that those responses, and we kind of fed it back to the groups. But the thing that was really cool was that these different program directors from artist groups, we had three different artist groups that came there that were different media, from Buddhist groups, and we had five different Buddhist groups, yoga groups, an AA group that comes twice a year for a small retreat. They all came together and they began to know each other. And they began to talk about their experiences of that place with one another. And they began to discover ways that they could help each other in their common goals. And when I was talking to them, the question came up, you know, why are you doing this? You know, asking me and the board, why are you doing this? And I said, well, I want you to know specifically, this is not about money. This is not about growing our business at Samish Island Campground. This is not a money thing. This is a human thing. We recognize that each one of the groups that used Samish Island Campground were groups that were dedicated to making the world a better place through art, through meditation and self-discovery and improvement, through addiction recovery, all of the different ways that these groups are engaged in making the world a better place. And I told them, we want to be fully engaged in that. And I provided for them kind of an explanation of the community of Christ in a deeper way than they understood before. And the responses I got from different leaders was nice is not really a good enough word, but it was nice to hear folks say, who were part of Christian organizations, say, I wish my church was as open and caring as you all are. And their main experience with Community of Christ was through the campground. In fact, one of the ladies, it was interesting. I had been, as a full-time church minister, I had been the Inland West Mission Center president once before, and my assistant, who had worked with me during my first few years there in 2006, 7, and 8, she's now working in a fair trade store. One of the ladies from one of the artist groups, who is a Unitarian, was over in Spokane for a Unitarian convention or conference, and she was shopping in this store where my former assistant was. And my friend said, you know, if I wasn't just steeped in my own church I was born into, I might be a Unitarian. And the lady from the artist group says, well, what church do you go to? She said, the Community of Christ. And the artist lady said, no kidding. I go to a campground that's owned by Community of Christ over on Samish Island. And my friend said, oh, well, then you know John Vanderwalker. I used to work with John Vanderwalker. And it was like, and then this lady started telling my friend how terrific Community of Christ was. And, you know, she'd never been to a worship service. She had never been to any function of the Community of Christ, but she had encountered the church through the facility and through the actions of the staff. So I got a real quick communication from my friend in Spokane, and she was just really tickled to be able to share this connection. And we can do good with our facilities. We can do good with our facilities.
I really appreciate the way fine-tuning the lens of mission at Samish Campground has expanded so much and built on a great foundation that others have laid, as you noted. But just turning the lens a little bit helps us see the magnitude of how we can be present in many diverse, powerful ways among the sacredness of creation, by what products we choose to use, by creating more space in the biome that lives there, and the diversity of wildlife that just has ripple effects of life-giving impact, and being fully present and available in relationship as we provide the infrastructure that supports the campground in ways of being available, whether it's knowing where to find you during meal times or your proactive pattern of checking in with groups as they're present in the campgrounds. And then this retreat that to me is just what an amazing opportunity to build relationship and to listen to one another and help people understand that we really are all in this together, whether it's at a campground that we all use in various ways or on this planet Earth. You're describing something to me that is a posture of being open and caring and letting people know that we can learn from each other in ways that really help us experience the blessings of community beyond just the walls of our church or the fellowship of our faith. Truly, truly a witness, a living witness. And the story you just told of one of your campers meeting a member of the church in Spokane and how that connection was made. Really, it's such a great testimony of what's happening and what continues to happen. John, go ahead.
So one of the things that I found too is because we opened up conversation, making myself available, making us available to them mm-hmm. on a regular basis, talking with them. When you have a silent retreat of Buddhists there, you don't really get to talk to them much. But at the end, you do get gestures of thanks for what you've done over the week for them. But being engaged with the leaders and allowing free flow of conversation, you know, I learned a lot about other religions and other ways of looking mm-hmm. at things. But we were able to share common ground, our life hopes, and mm-hmm. and the hopes of our churches or our church and whatever organization they were part of. The artist groups were very much, most of them were probably raised in a Christian denomination. Some of them were probably active, some of them not. But they really appreciated the community of Christ and their ability to be engaged with the church, the beauty of that place. And they appreciated the beauty of the place and the comfort. So that was good.
Yeah, when we allow space for a relationship to develop, and the mechanism you had in place for capturing stories from the various groups and then reflecting that back to the camp directors of the various groups, representatives when they attended the retreat. Such a powerful way of recognizing we have so much more in common.
We also provided those in printed form on mm-hmm. a bulletin board so that people could read them when they were in meal lines. And they would see themselves in this community of folks from all over the greater Seattle, actually all over the world. We had folks from Europe and Asia come for retreats at Samish. So these people were able to see themselves in a context of community that was beyond their own group. And that was kind of cool to be able to. And as I looked at that, I thought to myself, that is the community of Christ. All of these people that are engaged in all of these things that are uplifting our principles that we hold, they're not really our principles then, are they? They're the principles that are the community of Christ. And that community of Christ, some of them are Buddhists and some of them are artists and some of them are alcoholics. And so it really broadened my perspective of what community of Christ was.
I love that. John, you've shared a lot, and some of it has touched on this next question. How have you witnessed the transformation of lives and communities as a result of this new way of being and living at Samish Island Campground?
When you really focus on the comfort of another, in which Sandy and I did, and and Shauna, who is the other staff member while we were there, we all focused on comfort. Our chefs provided such outstanding food. You begin to see lives transformed. And it was interesting to watch the silent meditation groups. You know, silent meditation is not an easy thing. People don't come there and bliss out. You know, it's not a... It's not comfortable. One of the leaders of one of the Buddhist groups says, usually when you slow down and quiet yourself, life catches up to you and then you have to deal with what you've been running from. And so we got to see in these other groups significant brokenness emerge and then significant healing emerge. As I looked at that phenomenon happening in all of these different groups, I began to see that people were really at the end of a week of meditation or at the end of a week of creativity, they would go home empowered, refreshed. Some of them would go home with a lot to deal with yet, and yet having tools to know how to do that. We saw a transformation of attitudes in not only from the people that were coming there as campers, but also from the board of directors towards the campers. You know, you can't build a relationship on a spreadsheet. It's not something you can look at numbers and names and maybe group affiliation and have a relationship. You really have to get to know these people. The generosity that I saw emerge from folks as we began to build a relationship that was based on a common thread that was peace was really profound and it really was lived out and expressed in a way last summer when one of the artist groups, Northwest Watercolor, said that they'd like to make a presentation to the campground board and wondered if we could have some board members there during lunch. And so I arranged and told the board we need to have some people here for lunch on this day. And the president of the board spoke and said, you know, I've been a member of this organization for years, and I kept saying, we ought to do this and we ought to do that. And people would say, well, we can't do it on that weekend because we're going to be at paint out at Samish Island. Oh, we can't do it that weekend because it's going to be paint, or that week because it's going to be paint out at Samish Island, over and over again. And she said, I listened to that for 5 years. And then I finally went to a paint out and I understood this opportunity to be in community, secluded away from the world, and just completely and totally devote themselves to one another and to art. And then after she said that, she presented the president of the board with a check, a fairly significant check. And she said, we want to be engaged in the improvement and the continuance of this project that you all have. And then two members of the group came up and gave checks as well, which were significant checks. So that including them in the direction through that retreat that I had, you know, the thing that we learned is we got to have better beds. You know, the 3-inch foam mattress covered with vinyl is not going to cut it anymore. By improving in some of the cabins and making them a really comfortable place of hospitality, it really caused a change in their attitude toward us. This church really wants us to have a good experience here, so we want to help with that. The lives that are transformed, whether it be a youth camp activity, of the community of Christ. I've seen kids' lives just totally changed because of their participation in. Like one year, the girls' camp wanted to have a work project. And so there were some things that I thought were a little bit flimsy, and it was a pretty serious construction project, but it was a repeatable project. So we're just building certain things, boxes to go around service units on the ERV park. And I wanted them to be mower proof. So I built them out of 4x6s bolted together, and those girls made those things. And, you know, people were saying, I don't know if these junior high girls will be able to do that. And I said, yeah, they will. We got people here to help them. And they absolutely loved it. And to see, we didn't have them cutting weeds. We didn't have them pruning flowers. We had them out there burning elbow grease on a brace and bit and drills and wrenches and saws and all of that stuff. And they did a great job, and they were so proud of that. Mm. And as they were installing those boxes, the care that they took to make sure that they were level and perfect, it was just really a treasure in my mind now to remember those young ladies doing that and how fulfilling they felt it was, and to be a part of the campground and to be able to participate in that way. So yeah, there's just experience after experience like that.
Wow. That is heartwarming to hear those stories and little glimpses into the healing and the generosity and the transformation that happens at Samish Island. And as we know, happens at many other campgrounds as well. No doubt, John, some of our listeners are thinking, how can we do something like this at my campground? So as you think about it, what are maybe some principles, guiding questions, or tips that you can share to help folks begin to explore possibilities at their own campgrounds, wherever those may be?
Well, first of all, it's the enduring principles. That is our foundational document as a church. It is the thing that should be the litmus for everything that we do. So look at those, and then the mission initiatives. And don't complicate stuff. There's a lot of folks that really like to complicate things and want to have formulas for things. But here's a simple example. Invite people to Christ. When you engage somebody, if you're a disciple of Jesus and you believe, well, even if you don't believe, but if you follow Jesus and you invite somebody into relationship with you, you are inviting somebody into relationship with Christ. Facility needs to be managed in such a way that people engage or encounter the principles of Christ through the community of Christ from the facility. And another example is that, you know, Sandy and I were certified in holistic management practices for farming. And because we thought that was kind of the closest thing we could do to managing a campground that is 86 acres and has a lot of land on it. We learned a lot about soil and a lot about air. So we decided we were going to be more sustainable. And we started looking at the campground in a way that's, okay, what comes onto this campground on a daily basis? We have food come in trucks. We have sunshine falling on the property all the time. We have rain falling on the property quite a bit of the time. There are birds and animals on the property. How do we operate sustainably in that? And so we started doing some things that we thought, okay, all of this energy is coming onto the property. How are we going to manage the use of that energy in a way that is beneficial not only to the people, but to the property? And the use of pesticides and herbicides is one of those decisions that was actually made before I got there. I tightened it down a little bit. We didn't use any herbicides. We did use a little bit of pesticide when we had stinging insects that could jeopardize the health of people. But I used to be a beekeeper, and I'm not scared of those things. So a lot of times I'd just go take care of it by hand without the pesticide. But anyway, we tried to look at everything, you know, how can we best manage this property? And people began to notice. They noticed when we quit mowing part of the property and allowed it go back to tall grass. And they noticed that there were a whole lot of flowers blooming down there now that we weren't mowing it. They also noticed that the young deer loved to go out there and bed down in the warm sunshine, but still be secluded because they were in the tall grass. They noticed that there were more birds and rabbits and things like that utilizing that area. So we started thinking about how is it that we can manage this property that really lifts up the principles of the church. We did an energy audit, paid a company to come in and do an energy audit. That energy audit cost us a couple of $100. It ended up saving us thousands and thousands of dollars. And once we got converted to LED lighting, we were saving $13 a day on our power bill. So that $200 for an energy audit and the expertise that we got from that was absolutely essential in the management of the property in a more sustainable way that uplifts the sacredness of creation. So the enduring principles are extremely important. One of the things that I always did was I would lift up an enduring principle to the people that were there. You know, as I gave my welcome speech, I would talk about Community of Christ is a church that is trying to become a peace church. We have these enduring principles, and one of them is, you know, the blessings of diversity, unity and diversity. And I would tell the artist group, because of the diversity of the groups that we have coming to this campground, we feel like we are stronger and that we are better because you are here, because you are participating in this property, because the beauty that you produce is helping the world. So you just try to use the enduring principles in a way that expresses to your guests and your partners, you know, the beauty that is the Community of Christ. There's just, like I said at the beginning, it's mostly a change of what's between your ears and how to look at a campground. I never looked at the bottom line. And I was in charge of running the budget that the board set. I did not find looking at the numbers to be that important, because I figured if we served the people, the numbers will follow, and they did. It doesn't mean that I spent money without thinking about spending it, because I did. I tried to be as careful as I could. But I didn't also hold back when there were necessary things that had to be done. Keep the folks that were coming there comfortable. It's a big process. And I think it's really important, especially for Community of Christ folks, to understand what happens at our campgrounds when they're not there. Because there's certain people that come to a campground for a reunion, and they never, ever understand what happens there in February when a bunch of watercolor artists come and produce art. And laughter and music and just fun. So it's kind of important that people understand what happens at their campground.
That is all very helpful information, John. And I know many of our listeners will be wanting to look at their own campground using some of these principles and guiding questions. For our listeners, we have talked a lot about Community of Christ enduring principles. So I want to give you a list of those so you know what they are before I ask John a couple more questions. Our enduring principles are all are called, blessings of community, continuing revelation, grace and generosity, responsible choices, pursuit of peace, sacredness of creation, unity in diversity, and the worth of all persons. John, what are the hopes that you have for the Community of Christ camping tradition going into the future?
I know that our camping traditions are like congregational life, like world ministries, are in a time of transition. I was baptized. My first story that I told about baptism happened at a reunion. One of the significant encounters of my wife's life was at the first reunion she attended with me shortly after we were married. So these experiences are important and not lost on me. I do know that we have a lot of facility that is remote and far away from population centers, and that then they're having a very difficult time functioning. I guess as I look to the future, I think that we're going to have, as a church, we're going to need to think about our facilities in a way that, as I've described, in a way of witness. One of the facilities we have at Samish Island is a gazebo, and it was very poorly used because the birds got in there and roosted, and it was not a very clean place, and the seating was really uncomfortable. So we got some just regular cheap plastic Adirondack chairs put in there, and people started using it. And then we put in new lighting and a cedar ceiling. And the cedar actually came from the property. We had it milled from trees that had fallen down. It's part of our sustainability. One of my dreams is that there's a center pole in that I would like to convert into a peace pole and have our different user groups provide a panel for the 8 sides of that peace pole so that we could see a visual item, a visual symbol of the unity of these groups that come together at that place. Future, I think, is going to be dependent on how we engage. I mean, for the Community of Christ camping program to be sustained, we're going to have some shift in our facilities. Some of the facilities are going to go away, but those that stay, we're going to have to see a shift in how we operate and think about them. And in some places where we don't have a facility that we can go to, you know, we need to think about, well, what is it? What is the purpose of our camp coming together? And I believe it's what it's always been, creation of community, but we have to concentrate on the community and not the program. I think Micah, scripture from a few weeks ago, Micah points out to Israel, you know, you've become so attached to the rituals, you've forgotten the God that's behind them. And God calls Israel to account for that. I think that's happening, has happened in the community of Christ, that people are so attached to the ritual that they've forgotten that it's the community and the God, the God behind those rituals and the community that those rituals are supposed to be serving. And some of those sacred cows, if you will, are the way we do camps and reunions. This world is in dire need. This society, let me say it this way. This society is in dire need of coming of age rituals for youth. And we don't really concentrate on that so much. We've combined traditionally boys and girls camps into you know, everybody comes together at all ages, and you know, maybe we need to rethink that. I don't know. Maybe we need to if we have those that are separate, maybe we need to rethink that we have them separate. I just don't know. But we really need to think about what it is we're doing and not just perpetuate the same old thing. That's kind of where I'm coming from. And, you know, I hope that this year we have an opportunity in the Inland West to be able to experiment with some of that.
Thanks, John. It's really exciting as you talk about that. I agree with you. I think the camping tradition is deep in the core of our identity as a people, but how we engage and operate in the context of that part of our tradition can take a lot of different forms, from continuing to own and operate campgrounds to becoming renters ourselves, focusing on that question that you lift up, what is our purpose, really requires us to do some important self-reflection as individuals and as a community, for sure. John, is there anything you want to say today that perhaps I did not ask you about?
The church is poised. We do have properties and beautiful places. We have a set of enduring principles that I had people at Samish Island whom I would share, sharing in Community of Christ with. Campground actually bought a box of those and I distributed them to program directors that were interested. People had told me, I wish that our church could express as succinctly as you do what it is we're trying to accomplish. And we don't really recognize that in ourselves. And I wish that every congregation, and if I were, you know, have a wish list, it would be that every congregation would think about, you know, how can this building and how can these people function in a way that is sustainable and bears witness in absolutely every aspect that they do, every aspect of their ministries, every aspect of the way they share in their community. There's we're poised. I mean, we really are in a good position. We just need to get that thinking into everything that we do. I'm excited about that, especially when it comes to properties. What I learned in those 3 years at Samish Island is really important. And I've begun to talk to congregations about that already. You know, how is this building actually living out how is the building living out the enduring principles? And frankly, in most cases, they aren't.
Well, thank you, John. You certainly give us a lot to think about. And also, we have a lot resident within us as a people, just as we are today. And to recognize that and to embrace it and to embrace all the possibilities that are open before us truly is a key to the future, to be sure. Well, John, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a joy to chat together and to hear more stories about your life and how God invited you and those who served alongside you and utilized the campgrounds to embrace new dimensions of how that campground could be part of creating sacred space and sharing with one another. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And a very special thanks to all our listeners. If you would like to hear more stories about mission, check out our What's Brewing series. If you have questions for our guest, John Vanderwalker, you can email him directly at jvanderwalker@seatofchrist.org. Again, to learn more about Community of Christ camping tradition, check out Project Zion podcast episode number 117, Reunions with Apostles Lachlan Mackay and Janae Grover. And to hear more about our enduring principles, check out episode number 239 with President Stephen Beese as he talks about those principles, how they came to be in the church, and the important role they play. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and you are listening to Project Zion Podcast. Go out and make the world a better place. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.